We,
Sonia
and Janooni, are a couple of pals studying science in undergrad. We are not professionals.
Though every episode is meticulously researched, mistakes do happen.
If you notice that anything,
and we mean anything,
we state is inaccurate, please let us know.
Your comments, suggestions, and queries are important in furthering our personal and audience's understanding of science.
Thanks for being a part of this discussion.
We appreciate you.
We really do.
Bop bop. Beep it up.
Hello.
Howdy.
Oh my god.
I'm gonna try to squeak again. Anyways, hello everyone. My name is Sonia.
Howdy. Janooni over here.
I'm glad you're over there, Janooni. With that intro, let's get on with this episode.
Thank you for joining us for episode 5.
Episode 5. Wow, we are flying through these. I did not expect this to make it to 5 episodes.
Didn't expect it past 2, but here we are.
Here we are. And you know what? I think that deserves some sort of celebration. You just kicked me.
I'm sorry. You wouldn't mention that.
Nope, I felt it.
Okay.
I accept your apology, even though... Oh, my laptop just closed. Anyways, today... I cut you off. Go for it.
I was going to say, today's episode is about sex and gender.
Yes, the science of sex and gender. Before we dive into this, just wanted to preface everything. Janooni, you cannot laugh when I'm trying to be serious.
You said before.
Before?
Yeah, it's like, it's so cute. And it was like,
I didn't even realize.
It was so cute. Oh my god, okay. Okay.
Before... If I'm illiterate, please point it out so I don't publish something with me sounding like a dumbass.
Anyways,
before we dive into this episode, really quickly just wanted to preface the fact that we are both cis individuals, and...
I was gonna say we definitely hold some unconscious bias.
Right, and with this topic being about sex and gender, we wanted to highlight that, and if anything that we say is not explicit in the manner that it should be, or if we describe something in a manner that is not accurate, we encourage you to let us know. It not only helps us improve our understanding of the topic of sex and gender, but anyone who does watch this, so we appreciate you for that.
Yeah, please hold us accountable for what we say.
Truly. Don't cancel us, though. We don't support cancel culture here.
That is toxic.
It truly is. But
with further ado.
Yeah, let's dive into this.
Okay.
Let's start off with some definitions here.
Okay, yeah. So sex is essentially what you were born as biologically. So what you came out as a baby.
Mm-hmm.
While gender is what you identify more as... It describes the characteristics of women and men that are socially constructed. So it's gender is essentially a social construct.
Yes. And sex is something that you are born with. Born as, yeah. And this is keeping in mind a definition that was put out by the World Health Organization. So this isn't us just spewing what we think sex and gender is. It's defined by the WHO. With that being said, you said social construct.
Mm-hmm.
Let's dive into that a little bit. Explain what you mean by that.
It's... Okay, so basically with social construct, it's what society as a whole has defined what a woman looks like or mm-hmm. a woman acts like mm-hmm. versus what a man acts like or a man looks like.
So it's predetermined biases
mm-hmm.
that have been set in place by society to... I guess, like, categorize and place people in boxes based on how they physically appear.
Yeah.
Even though it's not how they personally feel, it's just how they appear.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we definitely know that with gender, there's other genders
mm-hmm.
besides from female and male.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So gender, it could be, gender is non-binary. There could be non-binary. I'm so sorry. Yeah. Gender could also include non-binary individuals as well.
One thing that's super interesting to me is that the whole concept of gender as we know it in this context
mm-hmm.
came, it's relatively recent actually. It came around,
really?
Yeah, and around in the 1950s.
Oh!
There's okay. this dude, his name's John Money.
Sorry,
Money. Cool name, but also there's some history with this individual, some interesting context behind him. I encourage you to explore. We're not really going to dive into who he is too much today, but if you're interested in learning more about it, I encourage you to look up who John Money is. Anyways, so this dude, Dr. John Money, he introduced the terminological distinction between biological sex and gender around 1955. Before then, gender was explicitly used as something in grammatical classifications. So nouns, pronouns, and other words in like noun phrases.
Okay, like she, her kind of thing?
Yeah, like they, she, her. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So for example, like when we're, I don't know, in like French, you know how there's certain...
Oh, la, le,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. So it was... Exactly, yeah. So that's how, like, it was a grammatical classification. However, this dude, John Money, again, interesting name, he came around and used it as something to allow people to identify themselves as something that they weren't initially born with. It basically served as, like, a revolutionary way to allow people to define and distinguish themselves that is different from what their biological sex is.
Okay. And that is what we know of today.
Yeah, that served as like the foundation of how we came to define gender. Obviously, back then, it was something that was super broad. The idea of the LGBTQ plus community, like in all of its facets, were not defined by him when he first came up with this distinction. Over the years, that community and the terminology and the spectrum has expanded, but he basically came up with that spectrum idea that gender isn't something that you are inherently born with. It's a spectrum. It's a construct that society has placed on people to categorize them.
Okay, so he kind of started all of this, which is amazing, honestly.
It was very revolutionary in the time, and
Especially in the 1950s.
especially the timing of when this idea came out. That was when, in the U.S. specifically, when so much revolutionary civil rights were going on in the area. So this idea, when it came about, when it did, it served a huge purpose in enabling people to define themselves.
Which has now formed the whole idea that gender being a social construct. And has definitely helped bring celebrations like the gender party, gender reveal party.
Right.
So what everyone knows, a gender reveal party is essentially a celebration where parents share their the assumed gender of the baby.
Right.
Of the expecting baby based on the baby's genitalia.
But
when we really think about it, so the whole idea of like finding out your the baby's gender is through an ultrasound. So with that, they're actually looking at the biological parts of this little human.
The little dude or gal or non-binary pal.
Right? So essentially, they're looking at biological parts. But everyone calls it a gender reveal party. Mm-hmm. When, if you're looking at the biological aspects of it, it should be called a sex reveal party.
Yeah, like, how are you supposed to know the gender of a baby before it's even born?
Like, it hasn't, it's not like, hey mom, I'm like non-binary or like, or I'm a boy. Like, it's not saying any of that, right? Mm-hmm. It's just what science has told us that this is what it is. But science is not determining gender, it's determining sex.
Right. Which, keeping in mind, though, as a little... That was a beautiful segue, by the way. I respect that. But, keeping in mind, though, there are important distinctions, though, in science for when it's appropriate to say gender and when it's appropriate to distinguish sex. So, for example, in specifically health and medical sciences, reporting gender can serve as an important like epidemiological variable. So meaning like when you're identifying certain traits or certain behaviors or certain illnesses or conditions across an entire population, sometimes it's important to also include gender. Specifically because it allows you to see like a holistic view of what may be going on within a population. So allow me to elaborate. So, for example, there was a study put out that realize that the feminine gender, so independent of female sex, mm-hmm. so all like female identifying individuals, are associated with higher risk of recurrence of cardiovascular events. So an example of a cardiovascular or heart event would be like a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
So not just looking at the specific sex of an individual, mm-hmm. but looking at the gender, the feminine gender holistically. So all female identifying individuals, those individuals are more prone to the reoccurrence of cardiovascular events. If you specifically looked at sex, you would have not been able to distinguish that occurrence within a population if you were only looking at biological factors that lead to cardiovascular events.
Because it leaves like a whole subgroup off, like it doesn't really include
everyone. It doesn't provide a holistic view of what a population may be experiencing from a health perspective.
Yeah.
That's an example of when gender can play an important role, but it's also important to distinguish sex as well. So another example can come up when, specifically, let me just read it over here. Another study found that sex hormones can change the way that you interact with drugs. So the female sex, because of the estrogen that, you know, females mm-hmm. have, this may increase cannabis dependence.
Mm-hmm.
So estrogen is a hormone that may contribute to this sort of dependence.
Yeah.
Whereas testosterone, which is specifically found more prevalent to be in the male sex,
mm-hmm.
testosterone is something that suppresses opioids.
Oh,
so
that's cool.
Yeah, so in this sort of example, you can see that, sorry, I'm speaking very slowly, but I'm trying to be articulate and
that's fine.
So yeah, that's just an example of where understanding and knowing someone's sex is more important than discussing gender.
Yeah.
Because sex, having the XX or the XY or whatever variation of it is more important to realize in gender, because if you didn't know someone's specific biological sex, you would have not known how they interact with a specific drug.
Because you're talking more on a chromosomal level. So that's when sex would be more appropriate to use to distinguish between groups.
Right. Or not even just chromosomal, but like from a biochemical standpoint as well. Well, I guess that ties into that as well. But
that actually reminds me of, like, the study that, the CAMH study that we talked about in, like, the first episode.
Right. Yeah, so that's something we wanted to tie back into. In the first episode, we spoke about a CAMH study. Do you remember the context of it?
It was just a national survey about Canadians 18 years and older about their experiences of, like, in depression, anxiety, substance use during the pandemic.
Right, and in that study, you dived into it more than I did, but it said that it reported gender.
And it was only between, the genders were only female and male.
Yeah, so in a case like that,
that wouldn't have been, okay, if they were just distinguishing between female and male, that's the case where they would be looking at sex.
Yeah.
Right? If it was a case of gender and Canadians were reporting mm-hmm. their genders, it wouldn't just be female or male. There would be other individuals
uh-huh.
that would identify as, or like as non-binary.
Yeah. Or even then, like it would have said like female identifying, male identifying.
Yeah.
Just by stating female and male, that leaves up a lot of ambiguity in how you can interpret the results and whether or not it's like a holistic view of the population.
It's not really representative even of individuals who are non-binary.
Right. It leaves out an entire population. Even if you were specifically looking at the female gender and the male gender, that's completely fine. Mm-hmm. Like if that's what the study was reporting, okay. But the fact that it wasn't explicit in stating that leaves up a lot of ambiguity mm-hmm. in whether or not it is a true interpretation of how a population may be experiencing whatever they're feeling.
Yeah, so how are we supposed to know if there are differences amongst sex or genders if mm-hmm. they're not explicit in that?
Right.
To further think, biological sex is also not, like, it's not binary.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's, we may think, yes, we have been talking about sex being female and male,
mm-hmm.
but there's also the case of it not, sorry, I am trying to articulate this accurate, like, appropriate is better. There's also the case where it's, like, having X chromosomes doesn't mean, mm-hmm. like, XX doesn't mean you're female, or having XY doesn't definitely mean you're a male.
Mm-hmm.
So there's occurrences where there's actually sex reversal in humans, where XX individuals.
Uh-huh.
So before I go on to preface it, there is this gene, the SRY gene.
Mm-hmm. The sorry gene.
The sorry gene. What does it stand for?
Sex determining region of Y gene.
Okay, yeah. So the presence or the absence of the SRY gene, actually, it determines testes development.
I want to say something really quick, though.
Go for it.
You said determined, even though it does say there. It is important to recognize, though, that the SRY gene, the sorry gene, is not simply like an on and off switch mm-hmm. that like precisely, you know, does whatever. It is important to realize that, like, if we want to think of it as like the context of a symphony, right? Like, there's a bunch of instruments, there's a bunch of chords being played, there's a bunch of, like, parts to the symphony mm-hmm. that are involved, mm-hmm. right? The SRY gene is simply, like, the first chord played within that symphony, if okay. that makes sense. So okay. it is something that is vital to the symphony.
But it's not the soul.
It's not the entire song.
Yeah. Ah, I like that.
Yeah, so there are other components, and yeah. I feel like I explained that kind of convolutedly.
No, basically,
like, if you're looking to reiterate, yeah. as a symphony, yeah. the SRY gene...
That's the first violin section.
That's the violin section going yeah. off at the beginning.
Playing their solo, whatever, yeah. they can do that.
They got their part, but yeah. it is not the entire song.
You gotta get the viola, you gotta get the bass, you gotta get the cello.
Exactly.
Without them, you don't really get the whole song, you don't get the whole right. piece being played properly.
Perfect. So there are other mechanisms involved with sex determination in humans, but the SRY gene plays a very vital component to that. So it's not entirely determining it, mm-hmm. but it is a significant component of it, just to like be more explicit.
No, yeah, definitely. So back mm-hmm. to it. So in the case of if you had the SRY gene, you would be determined as bisex, a mm-hmm. male, and if you didn't have it, then you would be... determined as a female.
Mm-hmm.
But back to the whole idea of sex reversal in humans, right? So this is essentially the idea where, let's say, XX individuals, so this would be the case of females, they may incorporate some of the Y chromosome that has the SRY gene
mm-hmm.
onto their X chromosome. So these individuals they would think they are females, but they're actually sex-reversed males.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if XY individuals, so males, didn't have the SRY gene, maybe because it's inactivated,
mm-hmm.
or they had lost part of it, and had like some of an X chromosome in the place of the Y chromosome, like part of it,
mm-hmm.
then they would actually be considered X-reversed females.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's also the case of intersex individuals. So essentially, these are individuals that have the physical characteristics of the opposite sex or have characteristics of both sexes
mm-hmm.
that are ambiguous to both sexes.
Right.
Sorry.
Like, what are examples of how this could be presented in humans? Like,
there's definitely, I don't want to just get into science. There's sex aneuploidies where there's mutations.
Uh-huh.
And like large, like a bunch of chromosomes have been affected.
Yeah.
So in this case, there's with the intersex individuals. So you have XYY,
which is Jacob syndrome.
There's XO,
which is Turner syndrome.
And there's XXY,
which is Klinefelter syndrome.
So these are the cases of atypical sex chromosome arrangements,
mm-hmm.
which would result not in the binary biological sex that we know of.
Right.
So that's just to show that biological sex, even though we're saying as science, like, if you have this and this or that and that, mm-hmm. it's not as binary as we assume it to be.
Right. That was a great description there.
But I think it's important to show that, like, gender and sex both are not, as I said, binary. But right. it's important for us to recognize how... what individuals identify,
mm-hmm.
what pronouns they use, to be respectful. And definitely mm-hmm. in research, it's important to know the different effects or like on like hormones, you were saying,
mm-hmm.
or even in diseases. It's important to identify this because, what am I thinking? Why am I buffering?
correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what you were trying to get at is that there's very important applications for distinguishing both in research.
Mm-hmm.
So they both have their place. Sometimes it's important to specifically acknowledge gender. Sometimes
yeah.
it's specifically important to recognize biological sex.
Mm-hmm.
However, the main takeaway from this is that they are not interchangeable.
Yes.
They both, they have their importance, but in science and in research and just in life and gender,
mm-hmm.
or in general, said the word so many times I'm getting tongue-tied, but just in pretty much all aspects of research and life in general, it's so important to not use these words interchangeably.
Yeah.
Because
they don't mean the same thing.
They don't mean the same thing, and the way that people identify cannot be, like,
misused.
Yeah, it cannot be misused. It's people's identity. Sorry, I'm going on a little bit of a tangent
here. Go for it.
But the way that we identify is so intrinsic to, like, who we are and how we behave and how we interact with just day-to-day interactions.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to type box people into something that they are not is not only, like, disrespectful to them, but it's just wrong. Like, it's...
You're not letting them express who they truly are. It inhibits
mm-hmm.
their... growth as a person as well.
Yeah, it's like, imagine if you were misidentified in any sort of way, it limits, it's not who you are. And I can imagine that, like, if that does happen to me, or when that does happen to me or anyone else, it doesn't, like, you're not happy with it sometimes.
It's not
like
good.
Yeah, sometimes you might not care, and if you don't care, you can just go on with life, you know, not really giving a shit, which is totally fair.
Yeah.
Like, if it's gender and the topic of gender
mm-hmm.
and sex, whatever, is not important to you, go for it. It doesn't matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
But so long as you're acknowledging that for some people it is very intrinsic to who they are.
And you're respectful about it.
And you're respectful about it, then there's nothing wrong with that.
Definitely. So, you know, as we're learning.
Yeah.
You guys at home learning, we're still learning.
Yeah.
I think it's important for us to be aware of these differences.
Yeah. There's so many applications. God,
yeah.
We didn't get to dive into too many today, but there's so many applications and situations where science and research misrepresents what sex and gender are. And hopefully, as, like, a new incoming generation of scientists and researchers,
God, yeah.
Yeah, like, we're able to
yeah.
distinguish that in how we articulate our research. So it's better representative of the people that we are trying to represent.
I was gonna say, Gen Z's coming for you.
Yeah, we're coming in hot, and
we're coming in educated, guys.
Heck yeah, we are informed queens.
We are informing ourselves every day, but we hopefully to be informed queens.
Yes, there we go. Well, that's the end of today's episode. Thank you very much for joining us.
Until next time.
Doodle-doo.